Try to make it last. Nothing you can do. In a photograph, the innocent you thought you lost is staring back at you. Whoa.
Hey man, I know we usually have the cold open and we go through like guess this actor, guess this film, whatever. Forget about it, man. We got so much Karate Kid to get into. So let's just do it.
This is it. This is the end of the line.
Telling me.
Did I tell you about the pool here?
For Daniel LaRusso.
Is this the only pool you guys got?
The future seemed far from terrific.
This place is a dump. You should go back to New Jersey.
Hey, I know it's hard, but we're not quitters, are we?
Until he met the right girl.
She's beautiful. I say she's beautiful. I think she's beautiful.
Is that your address?
You got it.
But that only angered the wrong guy.
Definitely.
You
gotta be nuts.
And his troubles really began.
You had to push it. Now you're gonna pay.
Then, in one man, he found a teacher.
I promise to teach karate.
And a friend.
Fighting, always last answer.
How did you do that?
Don't know. First time. Power, whole body. Make a perfect picture.
How do I know if my picture's the right one?
If come from inside you, always right one. Lesson about the balance, not just karate. Lesson for all life.
Fight, train.
So I won't have to fight.
Hey, Karate Kid, let's take a move.
No points or no points, you're dead meat.
I don't have much of a cheering section.
You got me.
In the end, it will be in Daniel's hands. In his body. And most of all, in his mind.
Concentrate, focus, power. Remember, balance.
No mercy.
Columbia Pictures presents The Karate Kid.
Hey, what kind of belt do you have?
Canvas. You like? JCPenney 398.
Okay, Jed, there's one thing I want you to know before we get into this. We started doing this podcast over 2 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. Has it been that long?
Yeah. A lot of greatness. We've laid down a lot of greatness, but I want you to know that the reason that I wanted to do this podcast with you is because you are the best around.
Is nothing ever going to put me down?
That's right.
What is it like? How do the lyrics go? Gotta be best, but you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Something about man taking it.
Well, a lot of it has to do with Rocky III.
Yep.
There's a lot of Rocky III flowing through that song.
There is. You know, that leads me to something. I want to get to all of our background, when you saw it and everything, but I'm gonna come out with some heat right now.
Love it.
Best song in Karate Kid, and why is it Cruel Summer?
It's just not.
It totally is. Cruel Summer is a fantastic fucking song. It's so good. I will say You're the Best Around by Esposito used better in this film than Cruel Summer is. But Cruel Summer, superior song, Bananarama all the way.
Now, are you just holding that to Karate Kid, the original, or are you talking about the Karate Kid universe?
I'm talking about the Karate Kid universe because they even do a remix in Cobra Kai, which is awesome.
You're crazy.
What is that, for season two when it's like the summer? I think they do that great Cruel Summer remix. I love it. I agree to disagree on that one, but I fucking love that song.
You understand that Peter Cetera is all over Karate Kid 2, right? You get that?
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Oscar-nominated Peter Cetera.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so
Bananarama, my friend. Bananarama.
We all agree Glory of Love is, bar none, greatest song. Potentially in movie history. Certainly in the Karate Kid universe. But that's good talk. I'm glad we got this out. It's been a while since we recorded. We're working this out in front of the family. I like it.
That just gets you moving, man. That's just so good.
And that, like, juxtaposed to being on the beach with, like, the Mendelssohn classical score going through. It's just really,
yeah,
really good stuff.
Yeah. So good. Okay, I got to ask you, when did you see it for the first time?
Dude, I can't remember when I saw it for the first time, but as a non-KC entity, this is maybe the movie I saw the most as a kid. I'm sure that I had seen it by the time I was 7.
Yeah, I think I was around, I think I was younger, honestly, when I first saw it. And I think this was another one. I'm going to go a little deep here, okay? I'm going to really get into some background. That's what we're
here for. We promised the people deep into Karate Kid and all of its glory of love. Fire away.
There are three films that I think really shaped me, not only as a movie watcher, but as a person. And those three films are... Those three films are Back to the Future, Teen Wolf, and The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
And I mean that because I went to the Y and took karate after seeing this film.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How did I not know that?
Yep, yep.
Awesome.
Even when I moved to Eugene, Oregon, I took Kung Fu there. But the love of karate and martial arts films started with this film. And I had it only recorded off of the TV when it aired. My mom recorded it for me, and I would watch that. And I watched it so much, along with Teen Wolf, along with Back to the Future. But those films shaped me. Like, this movie was my first exposure to a true revenge kind of thing. And that shaped what I love about certain films. It's why I love Tarantino movies. It's why I love so many kinds of things where, oh, this person got wronged in the beginning, but they're going to fucking train for however amount of time, and they're going to get their fucking revenge. And I get so excited when they fucking get theirs at the end. I mean, when Johnny Lawrence gets kicked in the fucking face, all that. I'm like, I'm pumped. I'm way more pumped than I should be. And it's because this shaped me.
Well, it also explains a lot about how addicted to revenge you are in real life.
Correct. Very true. Very true.
That list I'm looking at on the back of your background here, that's a real one.
Yes, that is. That is. I am applying lipstick like Buscemi is right now. I'm waiting for that call. Yep. And it's all good.
From what I can see, look out, Richard Karn. Am I getting that right?
We're not going to confirm or deny that name.
Sure. Sure. Okay. this movie, the same for me. Like, I remember renting the hell out of it. This was a movie that I was like constantly telling my mom, can we rent Karate Kid? Can we rent Karate Kid? And really, Karate Kid 2, and we're going to get into the universe, obviously. So, you know, this is going to be hopefully an expansive episode that we can still keep to a reasonable time limit. But I saw 1 and 2 and I was just addicted. You know, it was like that whole, because they play like one movie, which is both excellent and also hyper problematic in the grand universe. And we're going to have to answer some timeline questions coming up. But it was just because it picks up right after the tournament, you could just play them straight through. And we would have cable channels that would do that. They'd play Karate Kid 1 and then Karate Kid 2. And I loved it. It was, I never, ever, ever got enough of it. And because it has, it's Kid Rocky. I mean, it's Avildsen. So obviously, you know, when I was looking up facts and trying to do some research on this, I kept seeing, did you know this was influenced by Rocky? Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. Even if Avildsen didn't direct it, it's influenced, as all movies are, after Rocky, pretty much influenced by Rocky.
And our boy pod favorite Bill Conti doing the music for both.
Bill Conti. God bless you, Bill Conti.
So good. Music in this film draws you in, man. It adds a depth and a layer to this that you wouldn't find in other ones.
Well, and this goes back to I think there were some great scores in the 80s that were spectacularly good at taking an actual cinematic score and weave that in with Bananarama. Weave it in to where you're not just having the song in the background, but you're having, like, when they go to golf and stuff.
Yep.
The songs that are playing there are the songs I can remember hearing at, like, the golf and stuff where I grew up was either Wee Tee or Cartville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so I kind of remember the vibe of that music. And so it uses that stuff really, really well. As opposed to, you know, I hate to pick on Forrest Gump too much because I think that's sort of a popular thing to do now, but that soundtrack is just a soundtrack of good tunes.
Oh, it totally is. Totally is. You just
it's
throw
just,
that on.
Oh, that's great music. So, of course, it's a popular soundtrack, but absent one or two musical cues in that movie, I'm just like, yeah, that's just a really good song. I'm glad you played it. I'm glad I got to hear it. you know, sort of the same thing with Bohemian Rhapsody, where you're like, this was 2 hours of Queen songs. Cool. Queen's got good songs.
Yeah, that works. That's enjoyable.
Yeah, I can listen to that. But yeah, Bill Conti, genius, obviously. But this was a formative movie for me, too. You know, I probably put it up there when I was a kid. If I had to pick the top five movies I saw more than anything, you know, before the age of 10, it would have been easily Karate Kid, probably Field of Dreams, Disney's Robin Hood, the cartoon.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
You know, watch the shit out of that. I did watch The Godfather an awfully large amount prior to being, like, you know, a teenager.
That's good. That explains a lot. It explains a lot with your business dealings, honestly. And why you always have a cat on your lap.
Yeah, obviously. I work on favors. But this was so huge for me because the action star in the movie, you're questioning it the whole time. You're like, this guy is not coordinated. I don't understand. But I buy it because most of us aren't chiseled out of stone Johnny Lawrence.
Exactly. And I'm happy you brought that up because there's a lot of things I want to touch on. I'm sure there's a lot of things you want to touch on. But Macchio, I want to talk about him for a second here as Daniel LaRusso. Totally uncoordinated. Totally can barely walk, it seems like. Always losing his balance, even though, as we know, balance is key. But I want to make an important plot point that I think was one of two genius things that were part of the plot for this film. And the first plot point I want to talk about that I think is genius is that they had the final encounter as a tournament.
Yes.
Because it's very clear that Johnny Lawrence can beat the shit out of Daniel LaRusso whenever he wants. Any of those guys can. But a tournament is different because you're not using full force and you're scoring points. So if you can figure out how to score those points, Floyd Mayweather, you can figure out how to beat the other person. And that's just a genius thing where other Karate Kid clones kind of suffer from that, where they don't have that and they have kind of a showdown thing at the end. And I'm going to talk about those later on. But this was a genius number one.
That's an excellent point. And when you watch those other movies and you see the hero of the movie who is clearly the worst athlete or is clearly the worst fighter or whatever it is, all of the sudden beat up the guy who would like absolutely dominate in whatever the skill is that is the point of the movie, it sort of lessens the ending for me. Like, I haven't earned that. Whereas Daniel earned this win by being able to outpoint Johnny Lawrence. Now, we get to a different problem in Karate Kid 2.
Yeah, we do. We do.
Where, you know, I think the worlds collided of having this understandable victory at the end of Karate Kid, and then we have to up the stakes in Karate Kid 2.
Yeah.
So, that being said, Karate Kid 2 is unassailably great, in my opinion.
Oh, so good. Such an excellent film.
But I do want to talk about real quick, the guy who wrote it, Robert Mark Kamen, he did The Karate Kids.
Yep.
But he's got one of the more interesting writer IMDb's, you know. He's responsible for The Fifth Element, the 1992 Gladiator movie, the one with Cuba.
The one that I love, yep.
You love it. I know you love that. He also co-wrote Taken with Luc Besson. He wrote Lethal Weapon 3, which is a very funny, good action buddy comedy.
Absolutely is. He also, A Walk in the Clouds, which is one of my favorites that I've shown to several people, and they look at me like, what is wrong with you? I don't care. I like the movie. I really enjoy
it. Tony Quinn's good in that. What are you going to do about that?
Yeah. Keanu Reeves, selling chocolate. I love it.
Well, I don't want to say it's better than Chocolat, because Chocolat is a delight.
No, it is a delightful film. Yeah, it is. Yeah, really good.
You know.
Inspired, though, by his own karate experience, I read, where he actually took karate from a John Kreese-like character and then did not like those teachings and found his Mr. Miyagi, basically, and wrote a movie. And he was like, yeah, I got to write a movie, and I got to basically, I wrote it as a way that I could just go hang out with my sensei and get paid for it. So that's great.
I love that. That's the Adam Sandler model, and I don't hate it.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing that kind of blew me away, there were the box office and budget I love, and you got to obviously adjust this for 1984, but they got 91 off an $8 million budget. That's just raking. That's guaranteed you're getting two more of these.
Well, yeah, but it's all the international, you know, $42,000
international. 42 grand overseas.
Something tells me the Karate Kid, even the title just did not translate very well.
No. I was shocked at this, though. I looked up the Metascore, and you know I don't give a shit about Metascores, but a Metascore of 60, nonsense. Fuck off with that.
Totally.
I'm not hearing that. It should be way higher than that. But
absolutely.
This has a really broad cast, but it's hard to imagine a movie better cast than this where there were so many alternatives that they were looking for, right?
Yep.
You know, usually when you see a great cast, like an incredibly casted film, the director or the casting director or the producers are like, most of these people were our number ones. This is who we wanted. This is a whole batch of, I guess we'll take that one.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Except for Pat Morita, which the director wanted, but Weintraub was like, no, I don't want him, blah, 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 and then finally had to do it.
Well, did you see who they wanted initially?
Yeah, the guy that didn't speak English but was a great Japanese actor.
Not the guy, Toshiro Mifune. Like, yes. Kurosawa's guy. Seven
his
Samurai.
Guy. Yep, yep.
Okay? Like, we could have had a Mr. Miyagi who was Seven Samurai. It was Toshiro Mifune who, mm-hmm. if you guys aren't familiar, I really encourage you to get Criterion Channel. If you can't, it's so good. They got a lot of Kurosawa on it, a lot of Toshiro from Mifune. And he's just like the biggest guy in Japanese cinema for 30 years. You know, super handsome dude, really, really great actor. But he came in and apparently his read was just a little too serious. It didn't have any of the comedic beats, which was the reason that people didn't want Pat Morita, because he's a stand-up comic. Pat Morita's a stand-up comic.
Happy days.
And they're like, yeah, we're not doing that. And, you know, we got asked, we might as well talk about this now. I think it's probably a good time to do it. We got asked a bunch of questions, and I'm sorry if we don't give a ton of credit, because a lot of people asked the same questions. So we have like four or five big questions, but they were asked by like 25 or 30 different people. A very popular one was, how do you guys feel about the portrayal of Mr. Miyagi?
I love it, myself. I think he's portrayed very, very well. I think I love what Morita did with the character. I don't think he makes the character a joke. This is not like a Breakfast at Tiffany's thing.
No, absolutely not.
At all, by any stretch. And I think Morita really took to heart that he was in this and wanted to make this a serious role. The only part of the portrayal that I'm not the biggest fan of is, and it's not by any fault of Morita, it's, I think they tried to shoehorn in his drunk scene to expand on his character, where it didn't really fit with this movie, would have fit more in Karate Kid Part 2.
Yes. And the drunk scene is one that, A, probably got his Oscar nomination. For those of you who don't know, Pat Morita got an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor for his portrayal of Mr. Miyagi in this film. Without that scene, probably doesn't. We'll never know. But I agree with you that I think if they were thinking long term when this movie came out, if they were actually writing an arc of three films at the time, it probably fits better in two. And it's not to me that the scene is bad. It just absolutely slams on the brake on a movie that otherwise sort of shits it and gets it.
I mean,
we get right into the first fight. You know, the beach scene is what, like 7 minutes in? I mean, it is rock and rolling. But, you know, to also answer the question, I would say that, you know, I've listened to a lot of Pat Morita's interviews. I've read a lot about it. I know there are a lot of people who consider the portrayal very stereotypical, which it certainly is. That, you know, you can't get away from that. But I also take Pat Morita at his word where he's saying, well, you know, I knew the character was from Okinawa. I have Japanese family. I based, you know, the accent and things like that on my uncle and somebody that I was trying to take this seriously. So I believe there was certainly a concerted effort. I had never read anything, and I'm not trying to retcon this or apologize for any of the producers or the directors or screenwriters or anything, but I've never read anything where they said, hey, Pat, let's crank it up a notch. You know, we're certainly not in Mickey Rooney territory, as you mentioned, with Breakfast at Tiffany's. And could things have been done better? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at, particularly in the 80s, I mean, one of my favorite trilogies of all time is Indiana Jones, and that is fraught with fucking problems all over the place. So, surprisingly, the way I feel about the Mr. Miyagi portrayal is, given the time, given the movies that were being made at the time, I think it's fairly good. It's not something that where when I watch, say, Temple of Doom, I get cringy. You know, even though I love the Indiana Jones movies, I get cringy when I watch Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, given Short and Round's portrayal, given the portrayal of the people in India, things like that. This one, I don't quite get that cringe quality to it. And I think that's a credit to Pat Morita, although he did say, like, look, I'm credited in the movie as Noriyuki Pat Morita because they wanted to enhance my Japanese heritage with the marketing of the movie. You know, they was certainly cognizant of it, but it isn't something that, like I said, sort of gives me alarm bells as, oh God, I shouldn't even be watching this. Like, it certainly doesn't get to that level for me at all.
I don't think this is a Tony Danza to Terrence Howard in Crash where he's telling him.
No. No,
I mean, has he been taking speech lessons? Because, like, he's talking as his character like he knows things. And, no, he's supposed to be the whatever person. It's not that. Now, I think the lines are written as though Mr. Miyagi is basically Confucius. And in the majority of the stuff he says, it's like something you would Confucius say kind of thing. But it never feels like, what gets to me the most is I never feel like they're making a joke of Mr. Miyagi.
No, no. And there's an earnestness to Marita's character. And one of the sad things that comes out of Karate Kid, and whether it's Macchio, whether it's Zabka, whether it's Pat Morita, certainly, is that there's a ton of talent on the screen. And really nobody got the Karate Kid bump. You know, you can say Elizabeth Shue, but she was on a different path. Like, Karate Kid, I think with or without Karate Kid, she probably becomes Elizabeth Shue.
Well, she got the cocktail bump, okay?
She got the cocktail bump. She got the Adventures in Babysitting bump. She, you know, I mean, she was on the fast track at that time to be the next one out of, you know, the non-Breakfast Club people.
I may blow your mind right now, or you may be like, Jed, you're a moron. It's really going to only be one of two.
Here's the thing. You know I'm not an or guy. I'm an and guy.
Be that as it may, did you know that Elizabeth Shue is the older sister of Andrew Shue?
What?
Yeah, that's for real.
You mean the Andrew Shue?
The Andrew Shue, the Rainmaker, the Melrose Place Andrew Shue.
Softball extraordinaire?
Yes.
Andrew Shue?
Yes.
I got to take a minute on that. That's the type of research we bring you in for. That's what I meant when I said you're the best. You find those nugs. Just
she's 4 years around. Older. She's 4 years older, but I guarantee you she looks better now.
I'll tell you what, she hasn't changed.
No, she hasn't.
Like, rewatching Karate Kid, which may have been the first time, because I also saw Cocktail a bunch. Like, Top Gun would have been, by the way, the fifth movie or something like that. Like, I watched Top Gun a million times as a kid.
It explains your beach volleyball.
Well, you know that. You strap on the jeans, you grease up, and you go play volleyball. That's how I learned, okay? Yeah. On the banks of the Illinois River, that's how we did it. But Elizabeth Shue, as I'm watching the 1984 Karate Kid, I'm like, 40 years later, you see her in The Boys.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, it hasn't changed. Like, even a little bit.
And you look at how much better she looks than Macchio and Zabka in season 3 of Cobra Kai.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, I can see why Allie's like, I'm good. Neither of you really need to be here.
Well, and as I'm watching Karate Kid, I'm feeling like, Allie, that's the decision you should be making right now. We're good here.
We're good.
I don't need any of this.
I don't need this fucking hothead punk who just, I mean, flies off the handle. And I'm not talking about Johnny. LaRusso is a fucking giant hothead in this movie. I'm not saying he's the bad guy. We're going to have that discussion. I'm not saying
that. Yeah, we're going to have to get into that.
But he is a fucking hothead.
Oh, he is. No, he's... There's a chip on his shoulder that is larger than his ridiculously long-looking legs for someone who's only 5'9".
And 15 years old at the start of the film.
So, okay, we're going to get to the timeline in a second, but we did get another question, and I got to give @KikiSid some credit for this question because I think it's pretty damn funny. She just said, does Mr. Miyagi hate Daniel? Because that kid is pushy. I'm like, I got thinking about it. First of all, Daniel is an ass, for sure. Like, your typical chip-on-your-shoulder teenage kid who moved East Coast to West Coast and, you know, gets a shit kicked out of him day one. Yeah, he doesn't love it there. I'm not trying to make excuses, but there's reasons, I think, to his chippiness. But then I'm thinking, how funny would it be if Mr. Miyagi was like, look, I was just going to straight-up train this kid. However, he's a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
And I've got some yard work. And so, Kiki said, I want to thank you for even putting that into my brain. I had never thought that before, but I think that theory holds water, man. How about you?
I think it does, too. I mean, I think the whole training sequence is an amazing thing and one of the most genius things in film history, because I can remember the first time I saw it. I literally remember the first time I saw it. Going, what's going on in this movie, even though I was young? And then the reveal that night when he comes back from fishing of what he's been teaching him. Whoa. mind-fucking-blown genius technique. But when you watch it again, yeah, I think he fucking doesn't like Daniel a little bit right now.
Oh, to steal a term from my father-in-law, genius term from my father-in-law, it's a humbleizer.
It's like, it is right, a humbleizer.
Daniel, it is a humbleizer. We're going to bring you to the house, and we're going to humble you a little bit. And I love it. And as I was rewatching it, I'm like, that's fucking genius. Like, I have no doubt that that was about stripping that kid down to the studs then building back up and see if he's going to be worth my time. And, you know, the way that he sort of brushes him off at the beginning, like, look, kid, I'll get to the faucet when I get to the faucet.
Yep.
Had you come at me with a little bit of respect, I probably would have gone up and fixed your faucet right now. But as far as it is, you can deal. You know, I got some chopstick tricks to work on here, catching the fly, which I've never tried to do because I'm terrible with chopsticks anyway. But it's still a very funny scene to me when he's just pissed that Daniel got one. Just livid.
He's irate. He's
in
irate.
Three movies where he almost wants to kill a couple of people, he's never more mad than when Daniel gets the fly.
Oh, totally.
Let's get into the timeline because I think this is a question that, first of all, it's a question a bunch of people brought up, but I think even people who watch the movies, particularly the first three, it just makes no sense.
Zero sense.
And so I tried to extract some clues. We've talked about this briefly, but a lot of the confusion comes from how old is Daniel at the beginning of the movie. So do you think he's a senior in high school?
No, he is 100% not a senior in high school. He is 15 years old.
Why do you think that?
Because there's 16 candles on the cake when he has his birthday. And when he says the kid's legal now, he means legal to finally drive, because we've been alluding to the fact that, hey, he's driving Mr. Miyagi around, but he doesn't have a license. And it's not because he was in Newark and just didn't get around to it there. He didn't help drive across country with his mom. He didn't do any of that. All he did was bitch to her the entire time, which that's a whole other thing that I want to talk about, but I'm going to focus on the
timeline. I love it when he gets out of the car and he's like, well, I don't like smog, Ma. It's like, dude, you're from Jersey.
You're from fucking Newark, which I don't know much about it, but I asked Rachel and she said that's like the armpit of that area and it's a bunch of industry.
I'm not here to talk shit about anybody who lives in Jersey. I'm just saying, there's an air quality issue in big metropolitan areas. It's not like you rolled out from, like, Freeport, Illinois, population 11 and some pretzels, and you're like, oh my God, I can't breathe out here. No, that's not what happened.
So, yes, to me, he's 15 years old, and he's going into his sophomore year. She's not moving him right before his senior year of high school. And the other thing, the kids that he's saying goodbye to, one of which was Judy in the very beginning.
Right.
They're like high school, maybe middle school kids here, okay? This is not someone who's a senior. Now, Johnny, on the other hand, is
absolutely
senior,
a senior.
And he's 17 years old. And the under-18 tournament, he can still compete in, because I'm assuming his birthday is after December 19th. But we know Daniel's birthday is December 18th. And so, there you go. He's 16 at the tournament.
But that creates the problem. I agree with you because I also counted the candles. But that creates a much larger problem come number two and...
Absolutely it does.
Particularly number three. And that's where, you know, this is one of our sticking points. And we've talked about this in multiple films where these are very easily correctable issues.
Uh-huh.
Like, this mistake did not need to be made. And I feel like anybody I've heard interviewed that was a showrunner or a writer or anything like that on a long-running television show, they have what's called the Bible, and it's the canon of the show. Like, oh, we want to bring in this character, it's Tim's sister. Well, we have to look up, did we ever say that Tim didn't have a sister? Did we ever say Tim was an only child or something like that? And it feels like if you can do that on a television show that has 100 plus episodes, you can probably just rewatch the original real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The second movie doesn't have to start 6 months later.
Nope, doesn't at all.
Which you told me, because we were having this conversation, and I've seen the second one 50 times. I love the second one. Kumiko, God bless you, Tamlin Tamita. You're just awesome. you're phenomenal, and I love you, and I hope you continue to do just amazing work, and it was so great to see you in the last Cobra Kai season. But there's no, like, I had never noticed that, just because I'm focused on the car being wrecked,
mm-hmm.
and Allie running off with some dude from UCLA, and so I'm like, oh, maybe it's a year and a half later. Like, that makes sense. That would be fine.
Right.
Even if they did that in two, but then they come back in three, and it's literally the next year tournament. So everything that happens in one is goes from, you went to high school in California, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you guys start school in September here or August?
You don't expect me to remember that? Oh, fuck.
You're not 70.
It's September, I think.
Okay.
I think,
so
yeah,
we probably start September of, you know,
And that's
the
what it
year.
Says in the beginning. September is when they're driving from Newark, and he starts school literally. He has one day to settle in before he starts
school. Great planning,
school.
Ma. We're going to have to talk about some parenting from Mrs. LaRusso. But so they drives out. It's September. Everything happens from September, say, 84 to December 85.
He trains for about a month and a half.
Yeah.
Because it's after Halloween that he finally, like, trains him.
But from 1 to 3,
yes,
it's 15 months.
Yes.
Nonsense. Craziness.
I know.
No need for it. Because there's not enough time for him to finish high school.
Uh-huh.
Unless he skipped a grade, which Daniel LaRusso didn't.
Did not skip any grades, no.
How old do you think Allie is? Do you think Allie's a senior?
No, I think Allie is 15 or 16. Probably 16, I'm going to say, at the start of it. Maybe she's going to turn 17 in her sophomore year.
See, that's what I was thinking, too, because she doesn't have a car, and her parents would have bought her a car.
There's no senior Allie who's fucking dating a sophomore Daniel LaRusso. That's not happening. Now,
well, there's
Johnny
no sophomore. There's no sophomore Allie. There's no Allie that's dating Daniel LaRusso. That's not
that's
happening.
Very true.
There's no Allie that is going like, oh, the punk kid who I thought was kind of cute, who started fights and then comes to school with camo pants on and whatever, like, and then yells at me for telling me to mind my own business. There's no world where Allie's winding up with that kid. It's not happening.
You're absolutely true. Now, do you think that her friend Susie has the right idea about Daniel? Good, maybe you'll die. What?
A little harsh. Coming in hot. Absolutely. Also, just ridiculous. Like, a movie full of bad people, and I do not consider Daniel LaRusso bad people, but his new buddies ditch his ass so quick.
Well, okay. Can we talk about... Once we wrap up the timeline, I gotta talk about Freddy Fernandez.
Well, we're gonna go to the beach. We'll go to the beach after the timeline. Okay. So, to make sense of it, I don't know that there's much more to get into it, but I just want everybody to understand that in the world of Karate Kid, here's the only thing that I can figure out that makes sense. 15-year-old Daniel LaRusso moves out to California in September. He turns 16 probably October, November-ish.
He turns 16 December 18th. He turns...
Well, no, December 18th is the day of the tournament.
Day before. The tournament's the 19th, I thought. His birthday is the day before the tournament.
Okay, so he turns 16, let's call it, December. December 18th. Yep. So he turns 16.
Yep.
He wins the tournament that weekend.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We go to number two. That the very first scene is in the parking lot right after the tournament. So we're still in December of 84.
Yep.
Then it flashes forward 6 months later. So we're prom 85. May 85.
Uh-huh.
Allie's run off with some dude from UCLA. And Daniel's all pissed off after the prom. Whatever. Something happened to the alternator or the starter, whatever it is. So mom is going away or doing something in two, and Daniel goes back to Okinawa with Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, isn't Uncle Louie sick or something?
Uncle Louie's sick or something like that. And he's going to stay with Miyagi. And then he says, hey, I'll go to college when I get back. This is like college money that I'm using to go to Okinawa. So the only thing that makes sense is that Daniel LaRusso, 15, shows up first semester, somehow takes like 41 credits of high school first semester, and graduates early in May of 85. So skips a grade when he gets there. That makes two make sense. Then he goes to Okinawa for, I guess, the summer.
Seems like it, like 3 months.
Goes to a fight to the death, falls madly in love with Kumiko, which I totally get. Then comes home in three, I don't know, 30 pounds heavier and 4 inches taller.
Yep. Definitely was not working out after that fight to the death.
Yeah, now we're back. We're back in three in, I guess, September, right? August or September of 85.
Yep.
Just in time for Mike Barnes, the new bad boy of karate.
Who's under 18.
Who's under 18. Under 18. Sean Kanan, somehow under 18. Shout out Bold and the Beautiful fans. That's Deacon, Bold and the Beautiful. comes in to get into next year's tournament where he is advanced to the final automatically by being... But it's apparently a new rule that year because Johnny Lawrence sure in the first one has to go through prelims.
Yeah, no, no. This is the old Wimbledon rule where you win, you get to go to the finals.
You win, you get to go to the finals. So all that shit happens in 15 months. So that's the only timeline that I can come up with that will make a lick of sense in the time as a flat circle Matthew McConaughey world. Does that track for you?
McConaughey time as a flat circle. That reminds me, I think it's time for the McConaughey minute.
I think you're right. In 1984, I was just a little McConaughey, 15 years old, had two things on my mind. Listening to John Cougar Mellencamp and chasing chicks, man. 37 years later, I haven't changed. Now, back in 84, my old man was working nights at the local bar. And he would make these odd bets with all comers that would come in. He was known to have a drink or two when he was on shift. Now, one night, some big Hollywood director comes into the bar and they start jaw-jacking. And the big Hollywood director says, "I'll bet you $100 you can't pee over this pool table." And my daddy says, "Man, my son can pee over that pool table." Now, my daddy, known for a lot of things, not known to be a liar. Now, this director didn't know that. So I get a call from my daddy about 12:30 in the morning. He says, "Matthew, get up. I need you to drink a ton of water and come down to the bar." I said, "Daddy, I'm 15 years old. It's the middle of the night." He says, "Boy, when your daddy tells you to do something, you do it." Now, I know that. So I drink a bunch of water and I run down to the bar. This big Hollywood type looks at me and says, "Son, I bet your daddy $100 nobody can pee over that pool table." And I looked at him and I said, "Sir, well, that's too bad for you because there ain't no mercy in this dojo." I laid on the floor and I peed right over that pool table. I got up, I winked at him. I looked at my daddy, I said, "Get him a body bag, Pops, I'm going home." That director, John G. Abelson. Now, I've never asked for anything, but I'd like to think I had a little something to do with the popularity of Karate Kid. Now, until next time, I'm going to get in my AIR stream and just head on down the road. Talk to you later, boys.
I didn't know I could be more confused about the timeline.
Well, that's the thing about our friend Matthew, is he's an experience. Let's just say that. And the more experiences he's willing to give us, the better we are for it. And hopefully the better our listeners are for it. And I did a lot of research. I did not read that about the offer.
Yeah, that was interesting too.
I didn't see that coming like at all.
No,
but,
no.
Hey, green light.
Green light.
So let's flash back. Let's go to the beach real quick and talk about Freddy Fernandez.
This motherfucker.
Just not a great friend, man.
Not a friend. Here's the thing. Daniel kicks the door open, hits him in the face. Okay, that's Daniel's bad, whatever. Bad Freddy's play. There. Freddy's cool with it.
And to Daniel's credit, he said, "Man, that was stupid. I'm sorry. Yeah. That was stupid.
Yeah, I'm sorry." I want to point out the Making Bacon shirt that Freddy is wearing with the two pigs fucking. That's awesome.
Yep.
That's great. Freddy, right away, though, is like, "Oh, you kicked the door open. Do you know karate?" Yeah, no, anyone who kicks the door open doesn't mean they fucking know karate, dude. But yeah, I happen to take some lessons at the Y, so I'm a bit of a badass. I bet you can kick some ass. I bet you can show me how to kick some ass. Yeah, sure, no problem. So automatically, Freddy's like glomming on to this motherfucker. Now, Freddy knows the Cobra Kai's, because we see when the Cobra Kai's get to the beach, Freddy and the other guys that Freddy's there with, they're talking to fucking Steve McQueen's son, okay? They're talking to Dutch. They're talking to Johnny. They're talking to all of them. Here's the part that gets me. The beach scene happens, which we'll talk about. All that shit, Freddy drops him. Daniel, I have no idea how he gets home, by the way, because Reseda and the beach, not close.
No.
Not close at all. But they still live in the same complex. Daniel's in number 20. Freddy's in the 17. They go to the same school. Does Freddy just ignore this motherfucker forever or just look at him and be like, "You're the guy that got your ass kicked"?
No. Freddy drops his ass at the beach. Now, they get to the beach and, like, that's not soccer, guys. I'm not a soccer aficionado. You can set up, like, some rocks at the end and have, like, a 3-on-3 situation. All they are just running after the ball up and down the beach all day. That's all they're doing. That's not soccer. But I digress. So when Freddie meets him and introduces him to Happy Gilmore's grandma, it's always good to see her styling profile in there. He is standing up for this girl. Okay, I think this is an important thing for us to point out.
Yes.
Toxically or not, which it is, but it's not like Daniel randomly starts a fight with Johnny. And I feel like that's the rewritten history that we get in the YouTube videos. And they're all funny and all that stuff. They're great. Also, by the way, check out, as a quick aside, the YouTube video, the Funny or Die video with Ralph Macchio's career.
Oh, God. Love it.
Just great stuff. There's this rewritten history with Cobra Kai, and I want to talk about it now. Because Cobra Kai is extremely popular. It's one of the reasons we're doing this episode. We would have done a Karate Kid episode anyway. But, you know, there's a couple of reboots that have no business being as good as they are. And Cobra Kai is that in space.
Can I say one thing real quick? Because I want you to finish this whole point and everything, but I just got to drop in.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw Cobra Kai, the first episode, in the theater because they did a special event where they showed the first episode. I don't think it was the first two. I think it was only the first one. And then they showed Karate Kid Part 1. And do you know who was in the theater with me?
Don't do it. Don't say Billy was there.
No. Martin Cove and Sean Kanan.
Sean Kanan was... Okay, like, you have my phone number. I didn't get invited to this.
Yeah, no, it was at Universal City Walk, and I didn't figure you could make it up, you know, all that. And me and Rach went, and it was awesome. And it was awesome. Man, and they were back there laughing their fucking ass off during Cobra Kai.
Well, I imagine Sean Kanan is a very fun hang because, I mean, first of all, Mike Barnes.
Yep.
Secondly, successful career in soap operas. He also, from what I understand, tries his hand at stand-up comedy.
Oh.
From time to time.
There you go.
So, yeah, I didn't get invited to that Cobra Kai situation. You know, whatever.
No,
again,
but it was fun. It was fun. Good to see Karate Kid on the big screen, too. Never seen it on the big screen.
Yeah, I haven't either. I haven't either.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, you could
have done that.
But, you know, you didn't.
No, I didn't even know it existed. That's the thing. But
nah, well, I can't help that.
Yeah, I know. I got the same internet. I could have found it. I get it. So, okay. But Cobra Kai is so good. Like, it's incredibly good. It threads what I think is an almost impossible needle, which is plenty of nods to the original source material, but doesn't rely on those nods to the source material. Introduces us to new characters that lead the show that are engaging and developed and fun to watch and gives us a storyline that sort of makes sense given the seeds that are planted in the original material. And it is so, so good. But one of the things that kind of upsets me, and I want to say up front, I am a gigantic fan of Cobra Kai. I binge it. Jess and I binge it immediately when it comes out. We love it. But there's this rewriting of history, and I think it was a good idea for the show to say, hey, there's two sides to a story, for sure. But there's been, for years, you know, YouTube theories, How I Met Your Mother took it out for a ride for multiple seasons, talking about how Johnny is the aggrieved party. Johnny was the Karate Kid and Daniel is the bully. And to a certain degree, that's one of the in jokes in Cobra Kai, which is, no, dude, you were an asshole to me. You came in, you were talking to my girl, you were doing this. No, Johnny was a piece of shit.
Awful.
Okay. He's a terrible, terrible, terrible guy. Now, in Cobra Kai, he knows that. He knows he was one, and he's trying to become better. I'm not denying that. But there seems to be this history being rewritten where, oh, you know what? Daniel really was the asshole. Yeah, Daniel's a hothead sort of guy. I'm not saying I would want to hang out with. But, like, Johnny comes in hot to that beach party.
Oh, right? Yeah. After he says he's turning over a new leaf.
Yeah. Verbally abusive, throwing shit around. And Daniel is there. Yes, he's flirting with this new girl that he just met, trying to get to know her. They're having a good time. But he does what I think 90% of people would have done in that situation. It's like, hey, man, what are you doing? Like, get out of here. What is this crap?
Yep.
Like, he's not, because he's not bowing to the, you know, the homecoming king and queen and their history that he doesn't know anything about. Now, because he pushes him back, he's like, get out of here. And Johnny's like, let's fucking roll. That John, you know, the Johnny apologists out there are like, yeah, see, he got attacked. He's only defending himself. No,
not at all.
That's
he's
not
the
what's
bad
happening.
Guy. There's a clear protagonist and antagonist in this film.
Yeah, and is it my understanding that because after they kicked the shit out of Daniel, they went to the Halloween party and Daniel puts water on his head, that he should then be chased down and really beaten to within an inch, like attemptedly murdered, is what was happening.
And the only reason
there.
He does the water is because they tried to murder him previously by pushing
him
down the goddamn hill.
That with the E.T. shot, I do want to point that out. That E.T. yeah. shot when he's riding the bike across the moon. Nice. Just very a nice. Great nod. Yeah. Really good shot. And then they're like, let's push you down this gigantic hill of rocks. That's, again, not Johnny being a good guy. Mm-hmm. Not Johnny mm-hmm. being the Karate Kid. So as fun as that theory is, I don't buy into that shit at all. Johnny being the victim here.
He's not at all. And you're going to get no disagreement from me. I do want to point out for Cobra Kai, though, the genius move to have Johnny basically Demolition Man, cryogenically frozen, forever young style, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Right before, like right after the events of Karate Kid, basically, and then just wakes up for Cobra Kai, has no idea the internet exists, has no idea anything else is going on, is just like, I'm a handyman who can hang TVs. These TVs seem a little thinner than I remember, but whatever, that's fine. Yeah. And, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just
never met a computer, but I'll tell you what, when he's typing out that blog post in the last, or that Facebook post, all he's mm-hmm. like hunting and pecking, and then all of a sudden he's just flying through that shit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, he's a quick study. He's a quick study.
No, he's always
been. But yeah, the Cobra Kai is a genius show. Like, what they have done with it is incredible. I also want to point out one of the things people like to make fun of Mr. Miyagi for is, man, what a dick. He just, like, beats the shit out of five kids. No, what he does is he saves Daniel, and then these black belt karate assassin psychopath children try to kill him. Yeah. And so he defends himself. That's what happens.
Yes, he does.
So for you Johnny apologists, remember, that's what he does in the first episode of Cobra Kai. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm fine with him kicking the shit out of those teenagers because they deserved it. They were picking on someone smaller and weaker than them, a la Johnny and his buddies in the skeleton outfits. And they got fucked up for it, and I'm fine with that.
But you know who's not smaller and weaker than them in Cobra Kai Season 3? Miguel, no longer smaller Mm-mm. at all.
Adding mass.
Yep, yep. He's adding cultivating mass. He definitely yes. is.
Yeah, it's such a good show. I really, really totally dig what they did with Cobra Kai. I'm curious to see, because they expanded in the last season, getting into 2, and bringing back Shosen, bringing back Kumiko, and they did it really well. Like, I was worried that it wasn't going to make any sense. It totally does. I love how they did it.
Bringing back the girl great. That he saved.
Yeah. Oh.
That was a genius move.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It's really smart the way they're doing it. And, you know, Shosen, who, he was so good in 2. Like, I think he's really good in Karate Kid 2.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, when they fight to the death, that's one of those, I can't really buy the end that Chosen in any capacity would lose a no-holds-barred fight-to-the-death fight with Daniel LaRusso.
Well, he doesn't know the drum technique, okay? He has not figured out the drum technique, and...
It's my understanding, and I do not practice karate or any sort of martial art. Step back. Give yourself a little space. It's my understanding, I have a little bit, you know, I've... boxed a touch, just, you know, exercise-wise. I'm not a boxer or anything, but you're not required. The rules do not require you to stand there and just get hit.
No one ever told Daniel that, especially the rules about not just charging someone on the beach as your style of fighting. I took karate at the Y. They told us just run after the person, and they're like 5 feet away.
But, oh, I did want to mention, we kind of skipped over it. After he gets his ass kicked at the beach, his buddy's just like, look at this douche.
Oh, yeah, where'd you find here? This piece of shit, Freddy? Oh, yeah, he's a fucking loser.
Freddy's like, whatever, I'm out of here. And we never see him again.
We see him again, though. We do see him again. Did you notice where you see him again? No. Not at school during soccer.
I'm assuming the karate tournament?
He holds Daniel up. He's one of the guys that raises Daniel up when he wins.
Now oh, Daniel's shit, I didn't notice that.
Now he's his buddy.
So he's a fair weather guy. That's what we have.
He's a piece of shit human being. Oh, your mom moved all the way out here for Rocket Computers? I ain't never heard of him.
Yeah. Oh, that's probably not going to work. Thanks, Freddy.
Now, he was right.
They that's went not out the of point, biz. Man. That's not the point, dude.
And mommy's going to have to go become a hostess, but manager training.
Yeah.
Manager training. Yep. I guess in the novelization, they address that Rocket Computers went out of business. And as she's walking down the street wondering what she's going to do now that she moved her family out here, this woman comes running out of the restaurant and is like, I can't take it. And he's like, fine, you're fired. And then there's all these people coming in because it's a lunch rush. And she goes in there and says, I can work here, and becomes the hostess. And the rest is history with the Orient Express or whatever the restaurant was called.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm fine with them not working that out for me. I'm good. I'm fine. I do appreciate, too, Daniel going to his spot. Like, I got to learn karate, man. I got to learn karate. And she's like, yeah, well, you took some at the Y. He's like, no, not at the Y, Ma. A good school. Now, I have some personal questions I have to ask you. You can choose to answer them or not. But you live in the Valley, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you recently moved to the Valley.
Correct.
Now, did you get your karate brochure upon closing on that house, or...
Oh, no, like, the mailbox is... When did you start every mailbox is always full with karate mailers.
Okay, so... Because karate's huge in the Valley. Like, I had no idea about that.
Always big.
Yeah. So you've been training then. Like, you got into it.
Absolutely.
The karate gangs are heavy.
It's big. You got to pick the right one. You know, whatever your chosen discipline is.
Like, when you go to golf and stuff, you know...
I know who to gravitate towards and who to stay away from.
Yeah, obviously stay away from the Cobra Kais.
Obviously.
But,
obviously.
You know, they got some killers now at Miyagi-Do, so...
They do. They do have some killers at the Miyagi-Do. It's interesting, you know, they'll use books at Miyagi-Do to, like, hit you in the face.
Yeah.
And stuff. It's not just the hands.
It's no longer just defense only.
No, it's definitely strike first at this point.
Yep, yep.
But the other thing is if
That's why I was so worried about you when you guys were moving there. I got very concerned. I mean, I wasn't trying to be negative about whether you were going to move, but I got worried for your safety just knowing how thick the karate scene is.
And it overflows a little bit because you got the kickboxers like Tori coming in who've taken a few kickboxing classes.
Right.
All of a sudden they know everything and they can kick Sam LaRusso's ass.
Yeah.
Who's been training since she was a young girl.
Yep. Well, I mean, hey, again, never taught Sam how to strike. That's the problem.
No.
So,
no.
Yeah, it's... I'm glad you guys are making it, though. I'm glad you're weaving your way through that community and you're just sort of staying out of trouble.
We are. I just want Dimitri to be the one who beats the shit out of everybody at this point. I used to think that was going to be the Tanner Buchanan character.
Right. Well, yeah, it will be.
But now I want it to be Dimitri. I want Dimitri to own everyone.
He's going to absolutely come down. First of all, he's going to be 6'9".
That's the thing. He is growing like crazy.
He's going to do, God, what was that kid in Harry Potter?
Oh, yeah. I know which one you're talking about. Neville.
Yeah, Neville Longbottom, who just all of a sudden was like a 6'4 warrior. but I can't figure out, and I don't think the filmmakers know, because, you know, with 2, I thought it was a genius expansion of the universe, okay? I really enjoyed getting back to Mr. Miyagi's roots. I think focusing on him and developing him more was really great. I thought bringing the stakes up to a do-or-die level was smart.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be difficult to just have a karate tournament. It just doesn't quite make sense if you're going to do that every single time. It certainly didn't make sense to do it in the third one. But I genuinely think the second one is like this beautiful movie, a really nice love story, but it's not too sappy. It's a very cute and adorable thing, saving a town, doing all these things. And then, I mean, have you ever seen a trilogy just shit on itself harder than it did with the third one?
No.
Like, at least it took Rocky 5.
Well, yeah, and that was what I was going to talk about real quick was Adelson
did 1
directing
and 5.
Rocky 1 and then coming back for Rocky 5.
I know, right? He's like, let me fix this. Tommy Morrison, where you at?
I mean, no, I've never seen it, and it's, I mean, it's so bad. It's so bad, but then they're like, you know what, let's give it some time. Let's cool off until, what, 94?
Right. Yeah, it's like 93, 94.
Let's reboot it with the next Karate Kid. And let's say that for all those people that thought Karate Kid 3 was bad, we'll show you what bad is.
So, but hold up. Okay, we're not just going to completely shit on the next Karate Kid. I know you just watched it. I won't say that it is, like, Karate Kid 3 is just a bad movie that's really not that much fun to watch.
No.
You know, it's sort of, I feel like they're sort of trying to correct some of that storyline with Cobra Kai in the last season where, you know, you get Daniel who just is pissed off because Mr. Miyagi doesn't want to train him for his second tournament. And then he becomes kind of Cobra Kai for a minute. And wants to become an aggressive killer, but his girlfriend, non-girlfriend, because...
His friend.
Yeah, well, apparently Ralph Macchio had just recently become married and didn't want to engage in any sort of kissing or whatever, which I love Ralph Macchio, the lover boy of Long Island. I love you, dude, but like... It's the job. I'm not saying you got to get into like intense sex scenes. I don't think Karate Kid 3 was really calling for that. But if the job is there's a love story in this show, it needs to make more sense than like this random friendship.
And if your acting has any kind of similarities to Kirk Cameron, you got some problems.
You got some problems. Yeah, absolutely. And they, you know, one of the things that is super annoying about the third one, besides the storyline not making sense at all, is... I don't know that you can necessarily increase the stakes to save a town, don't die, you know? But they literally reduced every stake in the third one. They're like, let's just make it a karate tournament again. Let's not make it, is he going to get the girl? Because it doesn't matter because they're friends. So there's not a relationship on the line. There's not...
There's Mr. Miyagi's business and his savings.
Yeah, it's his business and his savings. Yeah, it's not even Mr. Miyagi. They don't even try to do the Creed angle where, like, Mr. Miyagi is dying or...
Mr. Miyagi's very irrelevant to the majority of the film.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So they literally strip out any importance or stake where you don't care by the end whether the ending is earned, whether anybody is good. Like, it just doesn't matter. So it's like a bad movie that I really have probably seen once or twice. I don't care to watch it. It's not like so bad it's good. It's not... You know, it's not a Temple of Doom where people would probably say that's the weakest of the three, but it's a totally watchable, like, almost horror film. Like, it's a totally watchable movie. Three's not really watchable.
The only redeemable part of three is Terry Silver, who is fantastic in that fucking movie. He's so much better than everybody else. It's crazy.
And so, you know, we get to the next Karate Kid where, why not? Like, why move Mr. Miyagi to Boston? I don't understand.
He's a liar because he trained her Julie Pierce's grandfather. But in the first Karate Kid, when Daniel asked him, have you ever trained anyone? Oh, no, never trained anybody.
Again, back to that Bible. Back to the show Bible. It's not hard. Like, it was a very big deal that Daniel was the only person he trained who wasn't a Miyagi.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. He's in Boston for no reason. And... Julie Pierce, played by 2-time Oscar award winner and very fine actress.
Oh, yeah.
Hilary Swank.
Million Dollar Baby. Mokushina herself.
Yeah. She's exceptional. She is a high school student who's going to a high school where the hall monitors are dressed in like wet team garb, like special forces uniforms, and led by Michael Ironside. And I guess the coda of that particular group is you can just kick the shit out of students at the school. And that is the point of this group.
Well, I will say they are the alpha elite. They are their version of a football team. And it's their ROTC. The dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my fucking life is all of that rationale. That exposition that Julie Pierce's... boyfriend, whatever we'll call him in the film, gives with like, oh no, I want to get in the Air Force. That's why I'm joining them, because Ironside, evidently, same character from Top Gun, he just retires here. In with the police, by the way. It's Michael Ironside, exactly. This is the alpha elite, man. They're better than a football team, and they're ROTC, and what's crazy about that
movie... Kick the shit out of this girl!
Oh yeah, no, they're all chasing her. Walton Goggins is chasing her.
Yes!
What's crazy about the movie, though, is it really has some beautiful moments. And I when I watched it again, first of all, Hilary Swank is by far the worst part of the film. Her performance is dreadful. I think she must have pulled a Josh Brolin and realized, holy shit, I don't know how to fucking act, because she doesn't know how to act in this movie.
Yeah, and then she's not great, for sure.
But there are really beautiful scenes with her and Mr. Miyagi when he's teaching her the karate waltz. When they're dealing with the hawk, when they go to the Buddhist temple.
Oh, her training sessions, particularly at the temple, are great.
Great. But the movie as a whole looks like it was shot for like Cinemax almost. And
yeah, for like a Disney movie of the week or something. Yeah.
Is Laszlo Kovacs was the DP on that film. Fucking,
I didn't know that.
Peter Bogdanovich's dude, done so many amazing things. And I'm just like, I can't believe you couldn't have made, with everyone involved, you couldn't have made a worse movie if you tried.
Well, and the funny part about, though, you know, and you may not agree with this, like, 3 to me, unwatchable. 4 to me is so bad, but kind of watchable, because it's so off the rails weird, just from a storyline, that it's, you're just sitting there the whole time going, what? Oh, okay.
They blew up his car in the end. They literally set his car with a, like, they fucking blew his car up at the docks.
Yeah, there are, like, terrorizing elements to The Next Karate Kid.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's so bad. It's not so bad it's good, but it's certainly so bad that it's fun to watch. 3, I just can't even get through. It reminds me of the look of that movie, and there was a time there in that sort of early to, you know, 91 to 95-ish, where a lot of movies that were geared towards teenagers, which I would consider The Next Karate Kid, and really The Karate Kid's really geared towards teenagers, had that Three Ninjas look to them. That Three Ninjas finish, you know?
I know exactly what you're talking
about. You know
what
I'm saying? Where, like, everything's just a little too well lit, like a little too bright, a little too smooth.
They hadn't figured out digital yet, I think, is really what's going on.
You even get that a little bit in the interiors of movies like Homeward Bound or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you get a ton of movies that ended up getting released into theaters that also looked like you said, a Cinemax movie made for that, or a Disney movie of the month, or whatever it is. And it does have that shine. But The Next Karate Kid, I just can't figure out, okay, we want to make another installment of The Karate Kid. We want to have a female lead, which I think is an excellent choice.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million other stories. Like, why that? I just want to, I want somebody to do the definitive why that story. And when you have people talk about The Karate Kid, the makers of, you know, the franchise and everything, they basically are focusing on the first one. And then they'll get into Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
I hate that there's very little information about 2. And I'm like, 2's great, guys. Like, 2 is so good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talent on the screen. It's beautiful movie. It's so good. Nobody talks about 3 except for saying, like, this is just a shit show. Ralph Macchio has this great tweet of him and Avildsen laughing on the set of 2, I think. And his caption is, yeah, this is when John told me about the plot of number 3. It's like, well, at least they're self-aware about it.
Yeah.
Really not too much information about The Next Karate Kid. I'm like, I just want to know, like, why those choices. It just doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
I mean, they bungee jump at the prom, and I swear to God, the whole purpose of it is because they're like, well, we need to break this prom up somehow. I know what we'll do. The Alpha Elite guys won't be at the prom to actually enjoy the prom. They're going to bungee jump from the top of the gymnasium. Here's the thing. How the fuck did they get up there?
Well, and if I remember correctly, was there a rollerblade chase?
No rollerblade.
There's not?
Chase.
Okay. I'm forgetting. That's another problem
with
these movies.
Thinking of Airborne,
like,
which has the guy who is in The Next Karate Kid as Julie's boyfriend.
There we are. Mitchell, you get me straightened out. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Seth Green, Jack Black, love Airborne. Great film.
Well, and you have to, you know, if it's in the 90s, you got to have bungee jumping, you got to have rollerblading, you got to have skateboarding. Like, there's just elements that you are required to have.
You got to gleam that cube.
Yeah, you absolutely, without question, Brink. So it's just really funny to me. And again, I'm trying to think sort of historically speaking with these franchises, because, you know, everything is becoming a franchise now for the most part.
Yep.
Like every movie that gets released is attempting to become at a minimum a trilogy, but hopefully 4, 5, 6, 7 movies. That wasn't necessarily the case when we were growing up. So there were these franchises, and I would say that it was Star Wars, obviously. Then you had Indiana Jones. You had Lethal Weapon. You had Die Hard. You had Karate Kid. And those, to me, were like the core franchises. Now, you have B-movies that would be, you know, Delta Force 7 or whatever. Like, I get that.
You got Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. I apologize. I knew I was missing one very important one. But, you know, you had those core 6 or 7 that were franchises. Now, just, it's literally, there's franchises inside franchises. Like, it's
that is correct.
A tchotchke doll of franchises. Mm-hmm. So, I'm trying to think, though, Star Wars, good or bad, all the movies are incredibly popular. You could make the worst movie ever tomorrow, slap Star Wars on it, and it'll make $1 billion. Like, that is its own entity. You look at Back to the Future, those are 3 great movies.
Great films.
You look at Indiana Jones, the original trilogy, 3 very fun, very good movies. You know, one of them is historically great. The third one is so much fun. And the second one is just a little dark, but like they're three good movies. You look at Lethal Weapon, the first three of those. Actually, I don't mind four either, but like the Lethal Weapons are good. The first three Die Hards are good. I'm not a big fan of two, but like they're good movies. I struggle to see a franchise that has Karate Kid, Karate Kid 2, Karate Kid 3, Next Karate Kid, the reboot Karate Kid with Jaden Smith and Cobra Kai. And I think for the most part, conventional wisdom is only the first movie and Cobra Kai is good.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, spawned that much content out of stuff that people genuinely don't think is very good, except for the first one. It, you know, I don't know if it's just not, I'm not catching up the right Karate Kid 2 message boards, but it's hard for me to think of another franchise that has gone four, really five movies, if I'm going to count the reboot, obviously, gone five movies and a television show. Actually, two television shows. There was a Karate Kid television show after the first Karate Kid came out. They also have a slot machine, which I understand is pretty popular.
That's cool.
To spawn just that much IP and that much produced material to not really be thought of as like, oh, all these installments are so good. They all build on each other and they all build this world. I can't really think of another one.
No, I can't think of one either off the top of my head. I mean, it's crazy. This is a one of a kind kind of thing.
Yeah, particularly when the lead of the movie didn't go on. Like, I think we all know Ralph Macchio, but yeah, we know him as Johnny Cade from The Outsiders, and then we know him as Daniel LaRusso, and we know him as, you know, in My Cousin Vinny.
Yep.
And then Cobra Kai. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, no one's like, oh, The Deuce.
Yeah.
That's the LaRusso show. Right. That's the Macchio show.
Yeah. Like, you know, I don't think a bunch of beer league guys are out there going, wait a minute. Hanging, you know, being like, he was in that movie with Artie Lang. Come on now. Like, that's not happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, to not have the star power come out of that movie to finance. Like, Keanu is getting John Wicks made. And the John Wicks are good. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think those are really good. But Vin Diesel and Paul Walker were getting the Fast and the Furious is made for a very long time. Now it's on its own thing and it'll just keep going forever. But you didn't have that gigantic star jump out of Karate Kid.
No. But it's insane that it's had the life that it has where Johnny was only in the first one. I mean, yes, he's in the second one. Very briefly in that scene.
In credits only for the most part.
Yeah, literally. The mom was only in the first one until you see her again in Cobra Kai.
Yep.
Allie, Elizabeth Shue, only in the first one.
Yeah.
It is crazy that no one really jumped out as a result of this phenomena of a film. And I don't have any explanation for it because Zabka's good. He's showing Cobra Kai how good of an actor he is. But, you know, Back to School and Just One of the Guys, literally not the springboard that it was going to be for him. And then it's like not a lot of stuff.
Well, and honestly, when it comes to Zabka, I have a bit of a theory on him because he is good. And when you watch Cobra Kai, like he's a good actor. He's, you know, not going to say.
He's the best actor. He's the best of the two with him and Macchio.
Yeah. Macchio has a boyish charm that, you know, will never have the edge of a Zabka. And Zabka has a hard outside, soft inside edge that Macho will never have, which I think is why they play so well in that show together. But yeah, he's extremely good. I have a theory, though, that coming out of that group, you know, that early 80s group, you know, basically the Hollywood second, you know, the second generation of Hollywood, your Charlie Sheens, your Emilio Estevez, your Kiefer Sutherlands, shit like that, right? You got your Swayzes. I think there's an alternate universe where if William Zabka has brown hair, no shit, just has brown hair... There's a Tom Cruise element to him.
That's a great point. Yes, there is.
They've got the same general look. If you look at Tom...
He's twice as tall as him, but that's fine.
He's a much more believable action star. But if he has brown hair, you look at Tom Cruise, you know, circa 84, and he's getting, you know, Outsiders, you know? It's not like Tom Cruise is, like, some amazing actor in The Outsiders. It's not like Tom Cruise is some amazing actor in All the Right Moves. Like, I can see Billy Zabka in All the Right Moves.
Absolutely.
I can see Billy Zabka in Risky Business.
Yep.
This early 80s role where I just kind of think about how did... I would have picked him, like, when I watched it. And I love Mach. Everybody loves Mach. It's, like, the nicest guy ever. But if I'm watching, in 84, this movie, all I'm thinking is, this Billy Zabka kid... I think can do it. And I literally wonder if brown hair does he, because when you list off all of those guys, you know, the Swayzes that were popping, and he was a little bit older, but the Swayzes that were popping at the time, it's all brown hair.
C. Like, Thomas Howe.
Rob Lowe.
Emilio.
All of them.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you had a blonde, it, you know, it was sort of an anomaly, and they weren't popping
Dolph
like
Lundgren.
That.
I gotcha.
It honestly, same thing. Like, where he didn't become a huge star. Like, it's crazy.
Well, and the other thing I want to point out is that Zabka, not really in that much of The Karate Kid.
No.
Really goes away for huge stretches. And it's interesting because he's such a memorable character, but when you actually watch it and you sit down and it's, this is a Back to the Future-like friendship with a Doc and Marty in Daniel and Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
This is them developing their relationship and us getting deeper into what makes them. It's like a buddy movie with those two in many ways. And it's those two going along and both helping each other in many ways. Now, obviously, Mr. Miyagi helping Daniel more, but I think Daniel, we see Mr. Miyagi as this kind of angry guy in the beginning, or at least that's the impression we're given. And Daniel softens him by taking an interest in the bonsai, but not being a jerk to him or anything like that, which this is a man who fought for the United States in World War II while his wife, who was pregnant at the time, was interned. Okay, she was in an internment camp. She was basically in a concentration camp as he's fighting for the very country that put her in said camp. And then once he's basically kind of over there and the war is about to be over, finds out that she died during childbirth, giving birth to his son. So he doesn't have an heir. And he's a hardened maintenance man who has a home that I know he wishes that was where he raised his child with his wife. And Daniel is this outlet for him that softens him. And you can see that evolution and that metamorphosis over the course of this film. And I, that's to me what I kind of love about this movie, and it's honestly what drives me a lot in Cobra Kai and why I was so excited, spoiler alert, for the end of season 3, where it's like, I want these guys to be friends.
Yes.
And I'm finally happy that it's happening at some level.
Yeah, and they have to bury a ton of shit in order to do that, but what I like that the show has done is to not make them fast friends so much as make them work through it in some capacity.
Yep.
Which again is a strength of the show. Like they will spend the time to consolidate the issues of the source material as well as build on the new characters and those complicated relationships. But you know, I want to go back to one thing you said with respect to the complexities of Mr. Miyagi and the performance of Pat Morita. I think has to be highlighted is, that's the only argument that I have to keep, and I'm fine with keeping the drunk scene, but without that, we don't really get the coarseness of Mr. Miyagi. And if Mr. Miyagi is going to be our father figure taking us through the movie, which he is, he's our mentor. He's an incredible mentor, right? If that's going to be it, I think it's important that we know where his initial rigidity comes from, where, as opposed to Kreese, we don't necessarily need or care about that complexity. Which, again, Cobra Kai tries to get into, and, you know, you can decide whether that explains
it
enough for you or
not. You're never going to make him a sympathetic character.
Right.
You're never going to make Kreese sympathetic.
Right. And nor is that the point of Karate Kid, especially. So if we just have terse Miyagi, terse Kreese, even though Miyagi's willing to train Daniel, I think it's just important to show that humanization. Now, you get it with the birthday party, but there's an understanding that, you know, it wasn't just Miyagi telling Daniel's son, like, you need to be something for me to get me excited about you. It was actually trying to break down a wall. And I do appreciate what that scene accomplishes. Just tonally, it is so different from the scene that precedes it and the scene that comes after. You know, that's the hard part. But, you know, it's such a fruitful and massive canon that this, the original trilogy, but this entire Karate Kid universe has supplied us with, like, all of this material, and it all almost comes out of the first one, which is so weird. Like, there's so many themes and so much greatness that comes out of the first one that has been able to fuel 35 years?
Yeah.
36 years? Something. I mean, it's incredible. It's awesome. Like, it is always a good rewatch. I'm never... Like, it doesn't have, as we mentioned before, it doesn't have any of those cringy moments. Like, there's some alley stuff And Elizabeth Shue's incredible, but I do think for the time, they at least write her as like, why do I have to put up with your shit? Like, you didn't call me. Yeah, like, whatever.
They also write the, you want me to drive? Yeah. It's the 80s. It's, yeah. Women can drive?
Yeah.
Women have been driving for years, Daniel.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about here?
I do love when he goes up, she's like, do you forgive me? And I just, every time I see that, I'm like, Allie, don't. You don't need to. It's all
so
good.
Much better.
You should go to UCLA. You'll meet somebody there. You'll like him. It's good.
I want to talk about the tournament here. Okay, because this is some crazy stuff. I counted. This is the first time I ever counted how many fights Daniel goes through. 7 fucking fights. 6 of them against Cobra Kais.
There's a lot of Cobra Kais.
It's a lot of Cobra Kais. And this is his first tournament ever. It's Miyagi's first tournament ever. He picks up on the rules and everything real quick, and I expect these other guys, like, he should have been out in that first round.
So, I've decided, like, John Kreese is the worst karate teacher ever.
Oh, absolutely.
What he is he's the, I've got one star, and so I'm going to use this kid to make my name. Like, that's what it is. This is Drew Rosenhaus and Terrell Owens.
That's a great call. But there are so many Cobra Kais that are awful.
Terrible.
I mean, awful. Lamar Luttrell from Revenge of the Nerds, awful. All of the cronies, all of Johnny's little Cobra Kais, as Allie calls them, I mean, just really not good. Like, they don't seem to get... Steve McQueen's son, Dutch, love him. He is menacing to look at. Not a good fighter.
Not a good fighter. And I did read he was apparently a real asshole during the shoot.
I'm shocked.
I can't believe it. Well, you want to hear... I do have a couple nugs.
Well, I love it.
Did you know that Eastwood's son was supposed to be Daniel or was in the running for Daniel? And
I did not.
When Eastwood's son... Not Scott Eastwood, by the way. Some other kid I've never heard of. I think it's Kyle Eastwood was in the running. When he didn't get the part, apparently, according to my research... Clint Eastwood banned all Coca-Cola products from his sets because Columbia Pictures was owned by Coca-Cola at the time. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Clint.
They also wanted Sean Penn to be Daniel LaRusso. That was another...
And Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. You know, the kids who were, like, hot and coming up.
I would love to see Sean Penn's brooding Daniel LaRusso. But I guarantee you Sean Penn was like... Well, I can't have anyone kick my ass on screen.
Well, no, he was also, apparently his quote was like, I'm worried about more serious movies. Like, hot take, Sean Penn's not that good an actor. I'm sorry. He's just not. Sorry, guys.
No. He's a casualty of his own thought process of himself.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, he's not that good. I guess, you know, at me and we can have that conversation. But
I am Sam. Yeah. Go home empty-handed.
But the tournament, what I love is they're like, here's the rules. We don't care what the rules are. That's what the rules of this tournament are. And what I love is it's like all the guys who are the refs and everything, except for the ref that checks them in. The ref that checks them in at the beginning. I love the 80s because it was all stuntmen that they would then give parts to. Because so many stuntmen, when you get to movies like Roadhouse, you get to movies like Karate Kid, you get to movies like Over the Top. All the guys that are either doing the karate or are having fights at the Double Deuce or are doing the arm wrestling tournament are all stunt guys you keep seeing in all, you know, the blood sports and everything. I love that.
I think it's interesting here how, so everything above the waist is a point, is my understanding.
Yeah.
And the head is a point, but you're not supposed to strike at a tournament. They don't really talk about this, but you're not supposed to strike with full force. So it's almost like you're fighting for real, but you're sparring in terms of impact. And so if you hit too hard, it's not a point. It's excessive contact, right? You get a warning. In the case of hitting below where in the semifinal it happens, and then he just goes right for Daniel's leg, that's it. But, you know, no point and you're disqualified, excessive force, all that stuff. The argument is, and this has been the age-old argument since the movie.
Did Daniel cheat?
Was the crane kick... excessive force to the face. I say it wasn't.
No. I say it wasn't, and this was a very popular question that we got asked. So I'm with you. I'm like, no, it's not. Because first of all, it wasn't full force.
Nope.
And, you know, I hate to be this guy, but Daniel is severely injured.
Very much so.
I'm not sure he's capable of full force. So,
and Johnny also just doesn't know what to do all of a sudden and just walks right into the kick.
Yeah, yeah. Hands low. All of a sudden, Johnny's hands low guy. Like, what are we doing here? And by the way, if your opponent gets into a crane technique, a crane stance where the hands are up here, he's going to attack you with the feet.
Yep, he totally is.
We're not going to punch from up here. This is not happening.
But if done correct, no can defend. I just don't think so. Chosen shows us you can defend.
You can defend that. Yep, you catch that foot and you throw him to the side.
But I also want to talk about the fact that Johnny at one point punches Daniel in the head, doesn't get a warning as far as I can tell, but there's no point awarded.
Right, right.
In the same fight. Not sure what's going on.
And if they want to say you're going to get DQ'd for excessive force, apparently intentionally snapping someone's ACL is not going to get you DQ'd. So there ain't no DQs in this tournament.
He grabs his leg and elbows him right at the knee behind, but nothing. No, it's just no point and warning and all the... The thing, though, that I love and I remember even the first time I watched it, Daniel gets hurt. He's back there. He's got 15 minutes or whatever to recuperate, right, see if he can fight. And you fought a great fight, son. The doctor's like, yeah, you're done. And this is the cut me, Mick moment.
Yes.
This is that moment, which I love. And when he's like, no, you can heal me because, you know, we've got the foreshadowing that happened where he healed his shoulder. He's like, how'd you do that, all that? And he slaps the hands, and the music is so perfect.
So good.
I get chills. Yeah. I get chills every time to this day. And it's like, Daniel LaRusso is going to fight. It's just, oh my God. And it comes out there. It's just so exciting.
We got to listen to it. I just want to listen to it.
No, Mr. Miyagi. You think I had a chance of winning?
Win, lose, no matter.
No, it's not what I mean.
I had good chance.
Well, can you fix my leg? I mean, with that thing you do?
No need fight anymore. You prove a point.
No, what point? That I can take a beating? I mean, every time I see those guys, they're gonna know they got the best of me. I'll never have balance that way. Not with them, not with Allie. Not with me. What?
Close your eyes. It's just so fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so good. I mean, get me a body bag because you murdered me with how good it is. That kind of thing.
Well, and I don't, again, want to apologize because one of the things I don't like, I had this problem actually with the new Mulan movie, was every time someone who's of Asian American or Asian descent, they don't need to have magical powers in order to be awesome. And, you know,
Bagger
one
Vance.
Of... absolutely Bagger Vance. That's going to be a tough episode. But... what Mr. Miyagi does here with the clapping the hands and rubbing them together, in my opinion, and I'm probably wrong, but this is the magic, like, kiss your kid on the boo-boo and all of a sudden your kid doesn't think it hurts anymore thing, where he's like, you know, when he was sanding the deck or whatever he was, I can't remember if it was sanding or painting. I think it was painting, where he's like, I can't move my arms anymore. And he's like, there you go. And Daniel could all of a sudden move his arms. Like, he didn't do anything. They don't teach the clap technique in, you know, medical school or whatever. And so I think at the tournament, it was like, no, you can fix him. He's like, yeah, I can do this thing. I'm giving you this. Now, whether that's based on a stereotype that Daniel has or the writers have, you know, whatever. But I think that is Miyagi going, this is my kiss on your boo-boo. Okay? Now you're fine. You don't understand it, but you're fine. Moment. This is, you know, the Herb Brooks, is it bruised? Is he going to hurt it anymore if he keeps skating on it? Then skate on it. Like, that's it. So I love that scene. I love that move. It's so good, man. And there's, it's just, it's a really good movie. Like, it's a really well-made film.
Such an abrupt ending, but so perfect because you're left wanting, oh, God, the story just started. Let's go. Where does this go?
Yeah, you're like, now I know these people.
Yep. Yep. And that's a great, that's a sign of a great film.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Honestly, when you watch more like that. So I don't know. Everything's great.
You mentioned earlier, you know, you've got a list of Karate Kid clones.
I've got some clones. There's tons of clones. I was inspired by Karate Kid. It's my love of martial arts films. There's, you know, Van Damme movies, all of that. Oh, but it all started with Karate Kid.
Absolutely.
But there are some serious clones of Karate Kid. And the first one I'm going to talk about actually was Van Damme's first movie. Have you ever seen this really low budget No Retreat, No Surrender?
No.
Okay, so what the story behind this is, there's this kid who is getting beaten up, and he goes to, I believe, it's been years since I've seen it, I believe it's Bruce Lee's grave, and he kind of, it's a white kid, prays at Bruce Lee's grave, and the ghost of Bruce Lee, who he calls Sifu, comes back and is now teaching him martial arts. And so that's the movie. And then in the end, Van Damme is like the Russian kickboxing guy who he has to fight, and he fights him. Now, this is such a low-budget piece of shit Canon Films movie.
Yeah.
I can't even fucking tell you. But it's a total Karate Kid kind of ripoff, right? Another one I want to talk about is another low-budget, absolute gigantic piece of shit. Like, and I loved this movie when I was a kid. I think it's from like 93, maybe, called Showdown.
Oh, Showdown's great. Showdown's not a piece of shit. Showdown's fantastic.
With Billy Blank and Christine Taylor.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so good. Showdown's great. I'm not gonna listen
Showdown
to
Showdown is so bad. I loved it when I was a kid. It's so, I rewatched it. When did you rewatch it?
I don't know, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah. It's you can see the mics in the movie when they're in like the, and there's like handheld cameras that they're using.
That's all right.
Anyway, Michael Cavieri, who is the lead bad guy in the next Karate Kid, part of the Alpha Elite, he's in Showdown. But this movie, what I love is that it knows about the movie The Karate Kid, because when Ken is training with Billy Blanks and he's asked him to help him, you know, learn to fight, Billy Blanks has him clean the toilets, clean the urinals, and Ken even says, so after I do this, am I going to know all these weird karate blocks? And Billy Blank says, this is called cleaning the toilets, man. This has nothing to do with... Best part of the film.
It's a true humbilizer.
It is. Another one I want to talk about real quick, Never Back Down.
You love the Never Back Down, but you love the Gagangit. You're a Gagangit guy.
This is all the Gagangit. The Amber Heard, the Sean Ferris, the Jaimin Hansu, and Evan Peters.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. I mean, you talk about just a straight-up Karate Kid clone.
Yep.
And hilarious, because Gagangit has no business beating up anybody.
No.
I don't care that he's got abs.
No.
He is nothing.
No. He's, like, what I love about Never Back Down, and it is a very fun movie, in my opinion, to watch.
It is.
If this had been the next Karate Kid, this would be so good. Like, Karate Kid to the streets is really what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's...
It worked for Step Up.
That's what they need. Karate Kid, Step Up to the streets, and nobody will know what the fuck's going on, but Jed and Cole will be happy.
Yep.
Yeah, Never Back Down is, I don't know, that's a fun movie. I don't mind that one.
It's a fun fucking movie. It's a fun movie. Jaimin Hansu doesn't know what movie he's in.
No, film. But Jaimin Hansu knows that he's in a movie that cut him a huge check for the movie he's in. That's what he knows. And that's all Jaimin Hansu needs to know, because he's fucking great.
His brother, who is a tennis star, when they come from like a place that probably has weather 9 months out of the year, so I don't know how much tennis this kid is playing, that he can go down to fucking the IMG Academy down there, and I'm assuming it's Bradenton. I don't care what they say. That's what they were going for. This is Bolotary's. And this
deep
kid,
cuts with Jed here. Really, really doing the backstory.
This kid sucks at tennis. Okay.
No heavy
He's
top.
Like, I thought you wanted to go to Wimbledon. This kid's already 13. He ain't going to no fucking Wimbledon, man. You'll be lucky if he gets a scholarship to Division III.
I mean, this. Awful see, when you're looking for a film critic to comb through a film to find holes, this is what you get at Cigarette Burns, all right?
Yeah. But the fighting scenes are really good. the fighting's Jake Seiler.
No heavy top for that kid?
No heavy top. No. Like, just not really.
Bad footwork.
I mean, a serve is horrible. I don't understand how people can't get a toss right. Just train someone how to throw the ball up. But we had this problem with Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Kirsten Dunst is tossing the ball 8 feet to the right and then like chasing it. Oh, but she hits the can. Give me a fucking break. This shit is like ridiculous. Paul Bettany, way more believable. The last clone I want to talk about is the one that, this is probably the first time I walked out of a movie and was truly irate and pissed. Because I saw this in the theater. This is the first time. And the movie is Sidekicks.
Ooh, yeah.
With Jonathan Brandis,
huh?
Danica McKellar, Chuck Norris, Bo Bridges, mm-hmm. and Joe Piscopo as the Crease character.
Yep.
Jonathan Brandis' character, real quick, has asthma, gets beat up at his school, likes Danica McKellar, decides to train with the guy who runs the Chinese restaurant, who is his English teacher's grandfather?
Yeah, something like that.
And Bo Bridges ends up having a relationship with the English teacher, and Bo Bridges is punching 8,000 feet above his weight class.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Always, by the way, just in regular life.
That's just in general. By the way, Bo Bridges in One Night in Miami.
Oh, my God. All I was thinking when I saw that, I was like, that guy had a kid. That kid became Kush's dad. And that's how we get to Jerry Maguire.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. But back to Sidekicks here. So there's all this buildup, and they fight at school once. It gets broken up pretty quickly, but Jonathan Brandis does like okay because he's learning now. And then the end is not a fighting tournament. They break bricks.
Yep.
And that's how the movie ends. And I walked out of that film. I wanted to tear that place apart. I'm like, these two are not going to fight. They're going to break bricks. That's your big fucking finish to this movie? I mean, give me a fucking break, man. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. I'll say this about Sidekicks. Loved it. Rented it a ton as a kid. And it's a terrible film. It's a terrible movie. But I encourage you all, if you can get out there and see it, for the part of Jonathan Brandis' character is he's a daydreamer. And so he'll get into these daydreams. And just Piscopo's performance in those daydreams is elite. Okay, it's on a different fucking planet. And I rented the movie a lot because I had a crush on Danica McKellar, so whatever. So those are great choices. What do you have for recommendations?
For DiMaggio, I got Crossroads. I think I probably recommended this before. He plays guitar. Love it. Gotta see it. There's not a lot out there for the match that I can really recommend.
Probably that and My Cousin Vinny, non-Karate Kid, are the two by far best things he's ever been in.
For Elizabeth Shue, I've got Cocktail.
Love it.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And for Pat Morita, I have a film called Collision Course with him and Jay Leno, where the description is Detroit crime boss hires men to smuggle a top-secret Japanese-made turbocharger into the U.S., but Madras's crooks are murdered and the turbocharger goes missing. As he searches for the stolen engine, so does straight-laced Tokyo detective Fujitsuka Natsuo, played by Pat Morita. Eventually, local authorities catch wind of the case, and onto the investigation comes brash cop Tony Costas, played by Jay Leno, who must team with his polar opposite, Natsuo, to find the turbocharger.
So it's Rush Hour.
Full disclosure, have not seen this film.
Sure, of course, of course. I also have a film in my recommendations that I haven't seen, but I want to badly.
And for Zapka, Just One of the Guys.
I didn't put it on my list. I knew you were going to do Just One of the Guys, so I didn't even bother talking about it at all. So those are great choices. I have no doubt that the Jay Leno, Pat Morita version of Rush Hour will be fantastic. So I have, for Elizabeth Shue, we would be remiss in not saying Leaving Las Vegas. Hard watch, guys. Incredible performance. Hard watch. But for me, she will always be Adventures in Babysitting. Oh my God, I've seen that movie so many times. Incredible film. Her singing in The Blues Club, just dynamite stuff. For Mach, I'm going to say My Cousin Vinny. Also, check out The Deuce, another hard watch. He's not like a main character. He plays a detective. For our boy Kreese, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay.
He does have a line in that movie.
He has a line in that movie. So I just want more people to watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because Jed and I talk about this movie a lot still, And I think I called you last week, and I was just fucking livid.
Yeah, you did. You did. You got real mad.
So check that one out. For the martial arts movies of the 80s, Kickboxer, okay? Kickboxer's just...
so fucking
amazing. It's incredible. It's incredible. It's everything the 80s had to offer and more. And then for our boy, last but not least, for our boy Zabka, a movie called Shoot Fighter. And I'm also going to recommend Shoot Fighter 2. Now, these movies... in addition to starring Billy Zabka, star Bolo Young, who's Chun-Li from Bloodsport, if you're familiar with the Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And classic. In Double Impact.
Yes. So, I haven't seen Shoot Fighter, but when I saw it, just the name alone, I got to see it. I want to see it. I'm going to watch it with you guys. But those are our recommendations. This movie clearly means a ton to us. Thanks for hanging in with us. We always appreciate you. You guys being there with us. You can find us on all the socials at SigBurnsPod. Email us, cigaretteburnspodcast@yahoo.com. Subscribe, rate, and review. Again, the rating and reviewing helps us with, you know, how they list our podcast so more people can find us. We really appreciate it. Jed, you got anything else?
RIP Pat Morita and Jonathan Brandis.
Yep, absolutely. All right, guys, for our next one, we got another one that's near and dear to our hearts for so very many reasons. We are going to get all the way into American Gangster, the Ridley Scott, Russell Crowe, Denzel classic that we believe is madly underappreciated in the canon of great films of the 2000s. So give that one a watch. Shoot us any questions you have, and we will see you next time. Later, guys.
Blue magic, baby.
Tonight it's very clear as we're above the line here. There's so many things I wanna say. I will always love you. I would never leave you alone. Sometimes I just forget. Say things I might regret. It breaks my heart to see you cry. I could never make